fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome and a marvelous Monday to you. So glad you're with me on the Cale Clark Show today. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call. 888-914-9149 to call and talk to me. It's free. Comes out of my paycheck, paying for that toll-free line. You can also email the show, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Or you could tweet at me. Grab onto my Twitter handle, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, show account, at Cale Clark Show. And yeah, if you're listening to the Relevant Radio News with Mary Graham, Mary mentioned that the new chaplain at Harvard is an atheist, Greg Epstein. And we actually did a whole show about this last Thursday on the Cale Clark Show. So hop on to relevantradio.com or the app or wherever you get your podcasts. That was a really good episode. We had a lot of fun. We actually had a Harvard dad call in whose daughter actually came alive in her faith at Harvard and says there's actually a pretty big Catholic community there. So go into the archives and check for last week's show. But this is Monday. It's a brand new week. And as we start a new week, a new work week for a lot of you, I want to ask you this question. Why are so many of you quitting your jobs? That's right. Maybe you're part of what's been called the Great Resignation. And what is this about? I'm going to tell you as we go through here. And our good friend Cal Newport, has written a lot of great books like Digital Minimalism and Deep Work, lots of great stuff. And he also writes for a number of magazines. And he wrote a piece for The New Yorker. And just a few days ago, Cal Newport did, called Why Are So Many Knowledge Workers Quitting? It's a really interesting piece, and I wonder if you can resonate with this. You can call in if you have a take on this. 1-888-914-9149. And he starts off by talking about a friend of his named Brad Stolberg. And he was an executive coach and a writer. And at the time, Brad Stolberg was living in Oakland, California. And one of his clients had called him, who was an executive. And, you know, Brad's an executive coach, right? So the executive calls him and says, man, I don't know what's going on. Because all of my employees, my very best employees, they're all quitting. And I don't know why. You know, is it me? Am I doing something wrong? And this guy, Brad Stolberg, said, man, this happened again and again and again. He kept having more of his executive clients call in and say, all my workers are quitting. What in the world is going on? As it turns out, this guy, Brad Stolberg, he actually was in a really good position to know why, because he did the exact same thing. Again, before the pandemic hit, Brad Stolberg, who's an executive coach, also a writer, he was writing a book, and the book was called The Practice of Groundedness. The Practice of Groundedness, this idea of being grounded. And he was really arguing in the book for having a values-based approach to what success looks like. And that's something that we as Catholics can really get on board with, because we believe in the virtues. We talked about that recently on the show. You know, how can we bring the virtues into play in our everyday life and into our work? And so Brad Stolberg's writing this book called The Practice of Groundedness. And as he's researching the book, he's thinking, wait a minute, maybe I'm not really doing this in my own professional life. And again, at the time, he was living in Oakland, California. That's a pretty expensive place to live in the United States. He was living in an apartment with his wife and their young son. And not only was he trying to be a writer, he was an executive coach. He was also working for Kaiser Permanente, a healthcare company. Now, I don't know if you guys, whenever I hear Kaiser Permanente, the first thing I don't think of is a healthcare company. I think like Kaiser Permanente sounds like a company that makes, you know, burger buns that are always fresh or something. Kaiser Permanente. You can always trust them. No, but it's actually a healthcare company. Maybe some of you out there actually work for Kaiser Permanente because it's pretty big. Anyways, so while he was writing this book, Brad Stolberg, he's writing this book about, you know, being present, developing ties in your community, really diving in. But he's like, you know what? I can't even act out this stuff in my own life. I can't act out on my own principles because I'm working 24/7, 365. I have to do that to keep up with the high cost of living in California, living in Oakland in particular. And as he said in the article, my laptop was always out. I was always working evenings, weekends. It just never seemed to stop. And so at the end of the year 2019, just before the pandemic hit, Brad Stolberg and his wife started talking about, you know, maybe we should move. Maybe we should relocate to a place where the cost of living isn't so high. Maybe we can get a little bit closer to family. So he and his wife started talking about moving from California to Asheville, North Carolina. The city was very close to family, lots of access to the outdoors, stuff to do. And then when the pandemic hit in the spring of 2020, they accelerated this plan full force. Brad Stolberg quit his job at Kaiser Permanente. So I guess he wasn't a Permanente employee of Kaiser, if you will. I worked on that one all afternoon. Hope you thought that was funny. And so he was also an executive coach. So he started cutting back his client list. So he used to work with all kinds of clients. He was working around the clock. Now he's like, I'm only taking on a limited number of clients, and I'm only going to work with these clients on Mondays and Fridays. Now his wife, who was also a knowledge worker, she actually shifted her work so that she could be a fully remote employee. So she was pretty flexible. So they decided to move to Asheville, North Carolina. They rented a house. They signed the lease without ever having seen the house, but it's near the charming downtown section of Asheville, a place I've never been to, but if you're there, you can tell me, call in and tell me how great it is. 1-888-914-9149. They got on a plane, Brad Stolberg and his family, and they never looked back. They never looked back. And Cal Newport says, his story is not unique. And I started off talking about the Great Resignation. Well, that's what they're calling this, because in June, the U.S. Labor Department put out a report that said, get this, this is in April of 2021, just a couple of months ago. In April alone of this year, 4 million Americans quit their jobs, just outright quit. And that's why it was called the Great Resignation. Maybe you heard a little bit about this in the news. And most of these people are generally well-educated people, and they're quitting their jobs not because the pandemic made it a problem for them to work, but rather because the pandemic and everything that happened to us over the last year or so made us think, wait a minute, I want to rethink my life here. I want to rethink my whole situation, my work, my family. What's going on here? Why am I doing this? And so a lot of people are embracing this kind of career downsizing, like Brad Stolberg and his family, who I just told you about, voluntarily ratcheting down their work hours so that they can focus a little bit more on some other areas of their life, maybe be a little bit more well-rounded, maybe be a little bit more present to family, community, that sort of thing. And so this is really intriguing to somebody like Cal Newport, who writes about this stuff all the time. And so he was saying in the article that he wrote in the New Yorker magazine, he had a number of anecdotes, people who emailed him, who kind of did the same thing. They downshifted their life. There was an information science professor at a university. Her name was Anna. And she wrote in saying, I quit a whole bunch of committees because I was sick of it. Ambiguous focus, long meetings, meandering communication. It was just totally draining my energy. She also shut down a research group that she used to run at her university, and she left a whole bunch of different projects. And she wrote to Cal Newport saying, this means that I will lose scholarship students, I will lose financial resources, I will lose power at the university, and so on and so on. And that's okay. That's okay. I'm actually kind of cool with that. It doesn't bother me at all. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. You can call in on this Monday. Michael, who is involved in technology, an IT manager named Michael, he wrote in. He was like, listen, I was driving over an hour to get to work. I often had to work nights, weekends. Workload was just crushing. So he decided to take a 15% pay cut so that he could get into a different type of IT role that demanded less time and would allow him to work from home. And then Cal Newport also says he got an email from an environmental consultant named Erica, who said, after being an environmental consultant for 15 years, I still do not have a good answer for what environmental consultants do. So, for what it's worth. So she decided to, hey, listen, I'm going to downshift too. I'm going to go into a part-time job and then figure out what I want to do next. So these are three examples of what's going on here with the Great Resignation. And so Cal Newport started thinking about this, and then he made this like weird connection that I think was kind of cool. And it's kind of a connection about literature. And so Lucas Holt, producer Lucas, I got to ask you this because you're a big literature guy. Have you ever read the book Walden by Henry David Thoreau, that American classic? Have you ever read that?
No, I can't say that I have.
Okay, all right. So I haven't either, just to let you know. But I have heard what it's about. I went on Wikipedia, so I know everything. So I've heard about Walden. You know, everybody's kind of heard about this, right? So by the way, this guy, Henry David Thoreau, he wrote this book back in 1854, and it's considered this classic of American literature. And Henry David Thoreau was mentored by this guy who's also pretty famous, Ralph Waldo Emerson, right? You probably heard of him, right, Lucas? Yeah, who hasn't,
yeah, I've heard
right?
of him. Yeah,
of course. Yeah, yeah. So Ralph Waldo Emerson had this like piece of property out in the woods. So basically Thoreau rented this land from him, and he said, I'm going to build this cabin in the woods. And so he wrote this book about it called Walden. And anyway, so Cal Newport was like thinking about this whole idea of people downsizing, quitting their jobs, you know, this whole Great Resignation thing. And he's like, oh man, and then it totally clicked into place for him. He said when he was a grad student himself, when he was studying at MIT, he checked out this copy of Walden from the library. And he's like, okay, it's an American classic. Everybody should read this, blah, 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 blah. So he started reading it and he's like, okay, this is pretty cool. Like, because one of the things he does a lot of great nature writing in the book, apparently. And a lot of the book is about how watching Walden Pond like freeze over in the wintertime and how it turns into ice. So anyways, apparently that's one of the most striking things about the book. So he read this book when he was in college, Cal Newport, and then he came back to it when he was writing about digital minimalism. And he was like, wow, this is actually like really applicable to what's going on in modern society. Because here's what Henry David Thoreau did. When he built this cabin in the woods, what he did was he calculated. The first chapter is nothing to do with nature writing. The first chapter in the book is called Economy. And so he's got all these like data tables in the book, which relate all the expenses, all the money that he spent to build this cabin in the woods near the town of Concord, Massachusetts. So guess how much it cost him to build the cabin in the woods back in 1854? Lucas, how much do you think it cost him?
Oh, gosh, like $50,000?
No, it cost him $28.12.
$28?
$28.12 to be precise when he wow. added it all up. Okay. That to build this cabin. So what was the point? Why did he do this? Well, a lot of people think, you know, when I looked up the book on Wikipedia, the Wikipedia entry, it said that a lot of people, they thought that his intention was to conduct an experiment. Could he survive, possibly even thrive, by stripping away all superfluous luxuries, living a plain, simple life in radically reduced conditions? So you know, and it wasn't just because he was trying to, like, you know, survive on his own wits in the woods, that sort of thing. He was also working while he was doing this. He was doing a lot of reading and writing while he was there too. So it wasn't like he was just retiring into the woods, as it were. So what was the point of all this? So Cal Newport was saying what he was basically doing was he was figuring out, he did like sort of a hard accounting of how much he needed at a bare minimum just to survive, just to get like reasonable shelter, reasonable food, reasonable warmth, the bare minimum. What is the bare minimum that I need to survive in this world? And you know, it was like to build the cabin, it was only $28.12. So anything beyond this point, any work that he did over and above this was purely voluntary. He didn't need to do it. So this actually comes into this whole thing of the Great Resignation, because What he starts talking about in the book, apparently, is why do we work so hard for stuff that doesn't really matter? So Thoreau, while he's living in the woods in the countryside in Concord, Massachusetts, there's all these farmers that are around him. And you know, farming is big business. It was big business then. It's big business now. And I'll tell you, I know some farmers who live not too far from where I live. And these guys run like multi-million dollar operations, like pig farming and stuff like that. It's like super sophisticated stuff. Like it's big business for a lot of people. So there's, you know, the traditional family farms that you think of, but there's also like pretty, you know, sophisticated operations. So anyway, Henry David Thoreau, when he's writing Walden, he's living in this cabin in the woods, and he's looking at all these farmers that live kind of around him. And he's like, these guys are crushed by the amount of work that they're doing, endless hours. And they keep getting bigger and bigger. They buy more and more land, and then they got to farm that land. He's like, why are they doing this? Like, why do they keep expanding? He's like, well, it's because of the consumer economy, because the Industrial Revolution is in full swing. The more land you have, the more money you can make off of that land. And the more money you can make, the more you can buy stuff. And what was the stuff that people wanted back then? It wasn't, you know, shiny new iPad Pros or, you know, a new Tesla. What did they want to buy? They wanted to buy shiny copper pumps and Venetian blinds. That was like the hot ticket items right there. Venetian blinds and shiny copper pumps. So he talks about this in the book. Walden. These are two things that people want. So he's like, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? Because the kind of thought is the cost of a thing that you buy, it's not just the money that you pay for it, it's the life that you want to exchange for the sake of getting it, either right now or in the long run. This is something he wrote in the book. Venetian blinds are nice to have, but if you have to work all this extra acres of land just to get the Venetian blinds, you're going to have to work more hours. It's going to expend energy, time you could be spending doing other stuff, maybe with your family, getting more involved in your community, yada, yada, yada. Is it really worth it just so you can get the Venetian blinds? Or could you get just as much pleasure from simply walking through the woods and looking at ice? Looking at Walden Pond freezing over. Will that provide you just as much enjoyment as having the copper pumps or the Venetian blinds? So that is really interesting. So what was he doing? He went into the woods to say, okay, now I know exactly what I need, bare minimum. Everything else is completely voluntary. And is it worth it? Is it worth it? And so I think this is really what a lot of workers are doing right now. And this is what Cal Newport talks about in his article. This is what's causing the great resignation. People are saying, you know what? I don't think it's worth it to you know, kill myself working just for a few extra bucks or whatever. It's taken away. So anyways, which line do you want to go to, Lucas? We've got some great calls here. All right, we're going to go to Anna, who's calling from Morgan Hill, California. Hey, Anna, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. My name is actually Ann.
Oh, okay, sorry. Are you there? Okay. All right. Sorry, Anne. Please call back. We somehow got disconnected there, so please call back. We'll get you on. And I do want to hear what you have to say, so please call back 888-914-9149 if you have a take on this, if this is resonating with you. So Cal Newport is talking about how all these knowledge workers, you know, maybe you're in that category, you're working long hours, making good money, lots of toys, you've got the stuff, but you're exhausted. And you don't see any real way to change your circumstances. But then the pandemic hit. And then you're like, hang on here. My life, change has been forced upon me. And it's kind of opening my eyes to what might be possible here. So entertainment. Maybe you used to spend like tons of money on entertainment every month. Well, now you're kind of stuck. You know, if you were locked down, if you experienced a lockdown, basically all you had was your Netflix subscription. And maybe that was enough for you. You're like, I don't really need to be more entertained than this. You know, the 12 or 13 bucks I spend every month, whatever they charge these days for Netflix. You're baking your own bread. I know my wife Trish started to do this during the pandemic, baking your own bread. A lot of people are into baking sourdough bread. They've got the starter kits. That's like kind of really all the fun activity that I need. The fact that I couldn't see my friends and family anymore showed me how important that really was. So, you know, spending so much time on Zoom meetings, you know, man, I'm sick of screens. I'm totally sick of it. I don't really want to do the, like, I don't want to kill myself just so I can get Venetian blinds. So, I don't know. Well, is this going to keep going, though? Like, we're kind of pulling out of the pandemic now, slowly but surely. You know, the Delta variant, everything's kind of pushed back a little bit. But eventually, we're going to get to herd immunity. Things are going to hopefully get back to normal. Is this going to last, this great resignation? I don't know. But it might. It might. And really, Cal Newport says he ran into this guy who started off the story, Brad Stolberg, the guy who used to work at Kaiser Permanente. So all he's doing now, he's just got a few clients doing executive coaching, not very many. He's writing still, and he just came out with a new book. And he ran into this guy, and Cal Newport's like, oh, how's it going? How'd it go? The move to North Carolina, you kind of, you know, did this sort of great resignation. He's like, man, all I do now is just go in the woods, you know, Henry David Thoreau style. I'm hiking with my dog. And Cal Newport says when he talks about writing his books, he's not talking about how much money he can make off of the books. Like most writers talk about, how much can I make off of this? But this guy, he doesn't say that. Instead, he's like, I just want to earn enough to support my new lifestyle. And I want to write about the things that interest me. I want to develop my work at the pace that I want, which ironically, as Newport says, is probably going to make him even more successful professionally, because he's doing stuff he's really passionate about, and he's taking the time to do it right. So he's like, hey, Cal Newport, why don't you move? Why don't you quit your job as a professor and move down to North Carolina? He's like, oh, man, I'm actually maybe a little tempted to do that, seeing what's going on. So if this is resonating with you, give me a call, 888-914-9149. Ann is back online. We'll get to you, Ann, in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break here on the Cale Clark Show, but see you there. Call in. I want to talk to you about this. Take a quick break. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, we were talking about the Great Resignation. Over 4 million Americans quit their jobs in April and said, I quit. I'm going to downsize a little bit, maybe not work as much. Maybe I don't need all the extras so I can focus on living a more balanced life. Is this resonating with you at all? 1-888-914-9149. We got our phone system fixed. We're back to the phones right now. Ann is calling from California. Hey, Ann, we got you back on.
Hi.
Sorry about what happened earlier. Glad you called back.
Phone getting cut out here all the time. So it could have just been our end, and I wouldn't have even known the difference.
Okay. So what's your take on this? What's your take on all this, Ann?
Well, it just really hits home, especially over the last several years. I've been a nurse now for 46, almost 47 years. I plan on retiring next year at age 70. I gave up management and I work, I do floor nursing on the night shift. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went backwards because of just the difficulty of it all. And it's almost like a disconnect between what you hear, and I do work for Kaiser, by the way, what you hear and what
Kaiser
the
Permanente.
Boots on the ground, so to speak, are experiencing. And it's very disconcerting to see young nurses that you're mentoring along seem frustrated so early in their career. Mm-hmm. And I don't see them quitting as much as I see lateral transfers to maybe the clinic or easier positions. And I will be honest, after the last couple of years, if I wasn't so close to actual retirement, I probably, for the first time in my life, would consider doing the same thing. But because, and I absolutely adore my patients. I absolutely love taking care of them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to be a little elevated from that on the unit. But I really resonate with all that. And wow. I will tell you that next year, when I am ready for retirement, I'm going to say potluck, no parties, I'm out of here.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. So Anne actually works for Kaiser Permanente. And by the way, being a nurse, I got to say, God bless you. You guys are the heroes, frontline heroes in this pandemic. And I just can't tell you how much we all appreciate you. So thanks very much for all that you do and for calling in as well. That was Anne calling from California. We're going to go now to Joy, who's also in California, in Irvine. Hi, Joy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Of course. I wanted to share a story. Mm-hmm. I, too, resigned, but I was lucky. I resigned from a big employee-owned company.
Okay.
To move to a small-sized company, but it's 5 minutes from my house. It's 2 blocks away from church.
Oh, wow.
And I kid you not, that's the best decision I've ever made. I mean, before, I would drive an hour and a half and be stuck in traffic. Mm-hmm. I wake up at 4, I'm on the freeway to get to my job. And I just thought, there's got to be more in living. I mean, I'm not like Anne, who's about to retire. I'm still in my mid-40s and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But the life that you put together now, it's something that you need to think of now, not later, I believe.
Wow.
And for us to understand what we really want out of life, I think it's the small things. And if I could share this with you, Cale, my dad, rest his soul, when I was young, he told me about a story of this rich guy, mm-hmm. wealthy guy, who was walking, who was by the seashore, and he saw this fisherman sitting under a coconut tree, mending his nets. And this is like mid-morning, and he asked the fisherman, he goes, "What are you doing, Mr. Fisherman?" He goes, "Well, I'm mending my nets." And Mr. Rich Guy said, "You know, if I was you, I would have gone out, take more fish, got what I mm-hmm. another set of catch or another big net of catch,
yeah.
sell it in the market, do it again so I can have more money. Look at me. I've got everything that I need because I worked hard and I did all this. And now I'm relaxing and I'm able to vacation and I am able to do whatever I want." And then there was a long pause and Mr. Fisherman looks up to him and he said, "Well, Mr. Rich Guy, what do you think am I doing now?"
Yeah.
And that story that my father told me is always with me when I always say, "Well, I wish mm-hmm. I have this and I wish I have that." But if you really think about it, there's more to life in the simplest of form than life in the grandest of form. And
yeah.
Never forget,
that's a great point.
A couple of weeks ago, you had this discussion also on your in your show, I believe, that it's written in the Bible. It was said that those who have much does not necessarily mm-hmm, have more,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and whoever has little does not necessarily have less.
Didn't have too little.
I think
yeah.
we all need to understand that. So, you know, that's my story. That's my testimony.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with having so little, but the grandest and biggest of life that you define for yourself.
And that's a great point, Joy. And obviously, you're someone who did downsize. You know, work for maybe a bigger company for maybe more money, but there was a cost that came with that, you know, time in the car. You know, I think he said he had an hour and a half commute or something like that. And I mean, it kind of reminds me of Bruce Springsteen's song, Born to Run. You know, the highway's jammed with broken heroes on a last chance power drive. You know, it's like just trapped in their cars. I mean, obviously it is necessary for a lot of people. But man, it's time is a huge resource. It's a huge gift that we have. Is that how you want to spend your time? And maybe it is. Maybe you have to do that. Maybe you're passionate about this job and it just happens to be hours away from where you live. But I really like what you did, how you live somewhere that's closer to your parish church. Maybe you could pop into daily mass. That's just interesting. Lots of interesting possibilities there. So, Joy, thank you very much for that call. Really appreciate that. So, yeah, lots of interesting discussion happening because of this piece that Cal Newport wrote in the New Yorker magazine called Why Are So Many Knowledge Workers Quitting? Or at least changing the way they work, the Great Resignation, they're calling it. All right, we're going to go to John in Dodge County, Wisconsin. Hi, John.
Hey, I just have two short stories to tell you. There was a young man about 15 years ago kind of tried to do what Thoreau did. He
okay.
thumbed his way up around in Alaska, and he lived out in the wilderness by himself, and he hunted and he fished, and it sounds terrific, but he took shelter in an abandoned school bus, and he had a little stove and that type of thing. He froze to death.
Yeah, yeah.
And his family was really upset, and I think they've made a film out of that now, but it's sort of a shrine. A lot of young people visit it, and they kind of treat him like some kind of a saint.
Oh, really?
But
wow.
I kind of think the whole thing was a little bit dopey, if you know what I mean.
John, I'd have to agree with you, and that's really not the point of this discussion. That, you know, saying, hey, you should actually live in a cabin in the woods. That's not the point at all. The point is how much. What is the? And obviously, the situation in Thoreau's time is different from today in terms of how much it costs to live, and obviously that varies on where you live. But in this society, in this culture, you know, there's this point of diminishing returns, I think, for a lot of people, in which they say, I don't really need all the extra stuff. I would rather have more time to be able to be involved in my community, maybe get more involved with my parish, get more involved with my family. I don't need necessarily all the extras that I could get if I worked more. But it just, you know, it's just not a balanced life. And we have to work well. We have to work for God. We have to offer our work to God. It's got to be a good offering. We can't give God a bad gift here. But at the same time, we don't want the priority to be out of whack. St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, who talked a lot about sanctifying your work, he said, look, let's say you're digging ditches, and I'm paraphrasing him here, if the shovel weighed 1,000 pounds, that kind of defeats the purpose here. So I don't know. I just think there's some interesting thoughts to be had when it comes to all of this stuff. And, you know, again, the reason why a lot of people are doing this is that so they can spend more time with their families, maybe more time with their spouses. And if you're going to do that, I have some news for you. There's something that can help you that we want to give you for free here at Relevant Radio. It's Father Rocky's book, Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. I don't think one of the rules is buy a cabin in the woods and just kind of stay there and talk to each other. No. But there's some really practical stuff in this book for you. Concrete advice about what you can discuss, what you should discuss before you get married, if you're thinking about doing it. And what do you do afterwards? How can you ensure that you have a more stable, a more joy-filled, a more God-filled marriage? So it's a quick read. Lots of practical tips you can put into practice right away, right after you start reading it. So you can get your free copy of Marriage Insurance by Father Rocky at relevantradio.com/marriage. No shipping, no handling, no strings attached, but you can only get it for a limited time. Once again, Father Rocky's new book, it's free. We want to give it to you. And marriage is important. We want good marriages in our society, foundation of society. Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. And you can get it for free, once again, by going to relevantradio.com/marriage. And speaking of Father Rocky, he's going to be along a little bit later tonight with the Family Rosary Across America at 7 p.m. Central. After the Cale Clark Show, of course, Tim Rees up next, and then the Family Rosary Across America, the happiest half hour of your day, as we like to call it. And a voice that you're very familiar with when it comes to the Family Rosary is our weekend host of the Family Rosary Across America. And she's also going to be subbing in tonight for Margaret, as she sometimes does, Sarah Tafoya.
Thanks for having me on the show, Cale. It's lovely to be here.
Well, Sarah, you just happen to be in the studio today, and I know you're going to be doing the Rosary with Father later. And I love listening to you guys carry on and banter and take people's calls. And it's so much fun. It really is a lot of fun. And How did you get involved with doing this? How did Father ask you to do this? And what's the experience been like for you so far?
Well, it's been a wonderful experience so far, Clark. And really what happened was we were joking about, you know, who might be the next person to kind of be in there. And someone said, oh, watch out, Sarah, he might ask you. And I was like, you know what? I would say yes if he asked me. So I emailed and I said, hey, Father, I volunteered. I said, Father, are you looking for someone? And he said, yes, we are looking for you. So here I am. praying the family rosary across America.
That's awesome. And I know that your family likes to pray the rosary too.
Tell me about
one thing that I love that Father says on the program all the time is that there's no such thing as a bad rosary. Sometimes we think, man, I can't pray properly. The kids are running wild. You know, there's all this noise going on. And this happens a lot in my house too, because we actually do listen to the Family Rosary Across America. And that's when we try to pray our rosary together as a family. And often there's distractions. And I love when he says that there's no such thing as a bad rosary. That seems to take the pressure off.
Definitely. And I would say it's not sometimes there's distractions. It's always there's distractions. And often when we pray at our house, I pray it on delay. So we pray on demand. I always play the video afterwards because there's always questions. What did they say? What does that mean? So we have to press pause because otherwise we miss the whole rosary during our explanation of what, you know, cancer is or what, you know, what this person's praying for. And so all of that. So, yes, there's definitely chaos and distractions. And when we do actually get a chance to pray it live, when it's actually on, that's oftentimes on Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on when I have dinner with my parents. We go over for dinner.
Oh, cool.
And so we'll pray together with them, which is always very nice. And we have a bunch of rosaries and we pass them out and they become whips very easily. So we have to everybody down. These are not whips, right? And
it's a spiritual weapon, but don't get carried away here, kids.
Just spiritual, not physical, guys, okay? Because, you know, I have two rambunctious boys, so they like to be physical, and that's great. But, you know, during the rosary, it's hard to kind of tame those. And, you know, they're little kids, so there's only so much taming that you can do, right? There's going to be fidgeting and moving around. So, yes, definitely not the perfect family rosary across America. And sometimes, you know, the little kid running off and playing in the other room, and you're like, okay, we're not going after him. It's fine, you know? You expect the older ones to be able to sit there and do some praying. So you just do little by little. And you know what? It starts off really rough in the beginning. Anybody who's prayed, I mean, when we first started, it was like a decade. And it was not often because it was just so rough. But, you know, you can't give up. That's the perseverance. There's so many so many virtues that you're learning when you're praying this as a family and individually. So, yeah, definitely don't give up. If your family rosary doesn't sound like what you're hearing or watching on the video, then you're in great company because that's families across America are all in the same boat, I'm sure.
I think that's so true. And that's a great learning experience for kids. Even if they can only stick around, if they only have the attention span to hang in there for one decade, or maybe even just the opening prayers, maybe just the creed, at least it's something. And they kind of get used to praying. I think those moments are really important as kids look back on things as they grow older. They'll be able to kind of draw on that and just getting them into the habit of praying, I think is so, so important. And apparently, Sarah, you're going to have, I just want to tease this for people out there. You're going to have a big announcement. There's a big surprise coming tonight.
There is.
On the Family Rosary Across America. I don't want to blow it, but.
Yeah, no, we won't blow any announcement out. I teased this last night when I did it last night at 7 o'clock. And so, yes, there will be a special announcement that I will be making today during the rosary. So you'll have to tune in the next couple of hours and you'll be able to find out with the rest of the Family Rosary Across America.
I can't wait. And hey, if you have prayer requests too, you can call in. And one of the things that we realize at Relevant Radio is that we're a family, like we're a Relevant Radio listener family. We really can support one another. And man, just knowing that there are, if you call in with a prayer request, there are literally millions of people that will join you in prayer. You can't lose. Why not take advantage of it? So call in. You can talk to Sarah later this evening, 7 p.m. Central, the Family Rosary Across America. Sarah Tafoya, awesome to run you down. I'm glad you're in the studio today.
Me too. It was fun to be on the show.
Awesome. Well, we'll be listening to you and Father Rocky later on. We're going to take a quick break right now on Relevant Radio, but we'll be right back with much more.
helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Okay, guys, so we were talking earlier about some people who are kind of downsizing their jobs in this great resignation during these pandemic times. I'm thinking, you know, I don't really need all the extras. I want to live a more balanced life. Well, if you do that, understand that you still got to work, okay? You still have to work. Slothfulness is not cool. It's not Christian. Can't do it. And in fact, I'm going to give you some Bible verses about this, about slothfulness. We don't want to be like the sloth, a three-toed sloth, as it were. And here's a verse, and this is there's a funny story behind this. At my grandmother's funeral, my grandmother was a total character. She knew so many people. Man, she did all kinds of stuff, and she sold Amway back in the day. A lot of people did, and she just got to know so many people during that. And so at her funeral, it was just, the place was just packed. And it was kind of a cool story that the priest who was presiding over the funeral mass, she was actually his godmother. When he was baptized as an infant, my grandmother was his godmother, and then he eventually became a priest. It's kind of a cool story. And so at the wake before the funeral, he came up to me and said, "Hey, could you please read at the funeral mass? Could you read the scripture?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." And he's like, "What passage did you have in mind?" He's like, "Do you know the Proverbs 31 woman?" And I was like, "Of course I know that. You know, I read the Bible a lot. I teach the Bible. I know that." Well, that was a little hubris on my part. I forgot to kind of pre-read it before the funeral mass, and I forgot that Proverbs chapter 31 in the Old Testament, part of it is about this wife beyond compare and how amazing she is. But there's also some other stuff in that chapter that's not necessarily related. So I had kind of forgotten that. It's kind of embarrassing. So I started reading Proverbs chapter 31. And it starts off by saying, I start at the beginning of the chapter, the part about the woman who fears the Lord, the excellent wife whom nobody can find, starts at verse 10. So here's what I started reading. I was so embarrassed. I was like, uh-oh. "What are you doing, my son? What are you doing, son of my womb? What are you doing, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, your ways to those who destroy kings. It is not for kings. It is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to take strong drink, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted." I was like, oh no, I am in big, big trouble. But I just kept digging deeper and deeper. I decided to keep reading, and I would eventually get to the right part. "Give strong drink to the one who is perishing, and wine to those in bitter distress. Let them drink and forget their poverty, and remember their misery no more." So anyways, I just kept
Cale,
reading
I'm
this.
Cringing over here, just listening to this.
Yeah. Well, after the funeral, I said to the priest, I said, "I am so sorry. I absolutely botched that reading, and oh my goodness." But I just tried to act natural and make people think this is all part of the plan. He's like, "You know what? I actually, under normal circumstances, I probably would have stopped you and, you know, made sure you turned to the right passage." But I was like, "You know what? No, maybe the Lord has a message here for somebody who's sitting in the crowd here. Do not drink strong drink," you know, that sort of thing. Anyway, so having said that, we eventually got to the right part, which begins at verse 10 in Proverbs chapter 31. It talks about the woman who fears the Lord. "An excellent wife who can find, she is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives," she's kind of like a businesswoman, "she perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night." She's always working. "She puts her hands to the staff and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy." And then it goes on. It just keeps going on. "Her husband is known in the gates where he sits among the elders of the land. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She laughs at the time to come. So this whole idea that she is diligent, it says she does not eat the bread of idleness. She does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the city gates. So that's Proverbs chapter 31. And that's a really good passage on don't eat the bread of idleness. Like this woman is doing stuff. She's kind of an entrepreneur and a lot like my grandmother was. So that's a good example. And also St. Paul, for a New Testament example, you could go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And this is what St. Paul says there. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some of you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busy bodies. Now such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and to earn their own living. So that's a good passage because St. Paul says, hey, if you're not willing to work, let them not eat, you know. And St. Paul himself gave them the example. He did not take payment from the church in a lot of cases for his ministry. He had his own profession. He was a tent maker, and he worked in this profession along with some converts that he made. Priscilla and Aquila, there was this missionary couple that he used to work with in Ephesus. They made tents together, and that's how they supported themselves. And the reason why he did that was so that nobody could ever say, hey, I'm doing this. Paul's doing this for the money. That's why he's an apostle. He's trying to swindle people. No, he was providing for his own needs and for other people's needs. He wanted to make sure he had something to give to the poor as well. That's one of the reasons why he worked. Plus, he wanted to set an example for the early church. And so many of the Thessalonians were idle. They were not working. I guess their favorite TV show was Thessalonian Idol, you know, as opposed to American Idol. Anyways, bad pun, but that's really cool. So that's a really good example there as well. So he says, hey, you're not being busy, you're being busy bodies. That's not cool. You need to work. And then, of course, Jesus himself. We could go to Matthew chapter 25, the parable of the talents. We all know that one, right? Jesus said, the one who received the one talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you go, you have what is yours. But his master answered him, you wicked and slothful servant. So here's that word again, slothful. We don't want to be slothful. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Well, then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. There's so many lessons we can get out of this parable of the talent. We've all been given gifts by God, talents, abilities, natural talents, spiritual gifts. And God expects us to use those gifts. He's given them to us so that we might use them to build up his kingdom and to help other people. And so to kind of just sit on our hands, that's not going to be pleasing to God. And that's not giving him a return on the investment that he's made in us. So laziness, bad stewardship, that's not cool. And again, my friend Cardinal Collins, like that's the theme of his ministry, stewardship. Well done, good and faithful servant. That's what we want to hear from the master. And that's in that parable in Matthew 25. Well done to those who did really well with the talents they were given. We've all been given talents of time, treasure, time, talent, and treasure. That's what we've got. So got to use them for God's glory. Really, really cool. All kinds of great scripture passages on this, on this need not to be slothful. And one of the things that we can get slothful in is we can get slothful of hearing. We can be hard of hearing spiritually. In Hebrews chapter 5, it talks about this. The writer goes into all this teaching about Christ, and then he says, about this we have much to say, and it's hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. You become dull of hearing. So you're not working real hard at listening to the message and putting it into your life. You're not mature in your faith. Hey, by this point, you should be on solid food, but you're still on, really, mama's milk. And you've got to move on. You've got to move on because God is expecting a lot of you. Well, speaking of listening, thanks for listening to this show today, the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So glad that you're with me for this discussion today. And it was produced by Lucas Holt. As always, producer Lucas doing a great job. Patrick Alog took your calls today. He might be the new host of Jeopardy. This whole thing with Mike Richards isn't working out. So, Patrick, that's his favorite show. He might not be taking your calls much longer. He might be in line to be the new host of Jeopardy. But hopefully he'll be with us tomorrow, and hopefully you will too. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.